Hello everyone. Today I'm going to be talking about building a real user monitoring system with open source tools. And before I dive in, a bit more info about me. My name is Cvetan Stoichev. I work on MPulse in Akamai. MPulse is a real user monitoring system. It's a commercial one, and it serves, I think, thousands of customers, Akamai customers. And my hobby project is Basic RUM, which will be the focal point of this presentation. And really, before I dive in, I would like to share a bit more about some of my other personal activities. Every December, I make an attempt to publish at least one blog post on the web performance calendar. That's the best place for the web performance enthusiasts in the year. And the other thing is sometimes I do a street art. So that's my safety net plan. If ChatGPT takes over the world, I still will have something creative to do. Yeah, so let's now move on to the important part of the presentation. And let's take a look how, in general, how a real user monitoring system would look like. So we'll need to have something in the browser, ideally a JavaScript agent that will read some data and it will send it to a server. We will store it in somewhere in a storage and later we will analyze this data. And here we just see the most trivial piece of JavaScript. This is the bare minimum that will do the job in the browser. So this piece of JavaScript will read what is the current page URL and it will create a one-by-one image, pixel image. It will append it to the HTML, and this actually will create, will force the browser to create a request to this endpoint. And here is a really very simple code snippet how, on the server side, how the code will look like when we need to intercept this data and to store it somewhere. So here is our route where the browser will hit this route. We'll read the query parameters, headers, and even we'll put a timestamp in the structure, and then we'll save it to JSON on the file system, and we'll return back to the browser a transparent GIF. And eventually, we will, on the next stage, when we want to analyze the data, we will go through all the files, and we can create a summary for the page visits. And for example, here in this example, we can see that category 4 was the most visited page with 427 page visits. So that's the theory. And in 2019, I started as a hobby Basic RUM. And that's the initial version and the components that I used to build Basic RUM. So on the browser side, I started using an open source library called Boomerang.js, which collects a bunch of interesting metrics from the browser and sends them to a server. On the server side, I used Nginx and some PHP application code. And for storage, I used MySQL. And for analyzing the data, I used PHP, and for reading the data and serving it to a front end. And on the front end, I used Plotly.js for visualizations. And I ended up with something like this. It's really interesting. After 5 years, it's still running. So if you want to give it a try, this is the first version of Basic RUM. You can visit demo.basicrum.com. And you can play with this UI. Now about Boomerang.js. Boomerang.js was started 2011 in Yahoo by Philip Telis, who happened actually to be now a colleague of mine. And currently, the library is maintained by MPulse engineering team in Akamai. And as I mentioned, the library collects a bunch of interesting metrics, like the interesting ones for Core Web Vitals, LCP, CLS, FID. It also can track some session data. It can also help users of the library to create a timeline of all the clicks over the page life cycle of a visitor. And also it has more modern ways to send the data to the server, like more modern JavaScript APIs, fetch, XHR, and send beacon. And it can be found on GitHub in akamai/boomerang. On the backend side, that's again like very theoretical, but what actually was happening, I still was, every request that I was getting to my server, I was saving it in a file. And then periodically I was running a cron job, which here I just marked as a, that's kind of a too much overhead, and you understand why later. But I was running a cron job that was reading all these collected files, and I was creating one big batch, and I was inserting this data in MySQL. I also ended up with a database model that's very biased. My previous background was I was building Magento online shops. And if somebody ever worked with Magento, will probably recognize some patterns about all these foreign key relationships and this main table that's in the center of everything. I had to put a bunch of indexes here. And again, this created a bit too much overhead for, I would say, also on the code level, like on the application level, but also for me as a maintainer. So I had to take care about, again, every time when I wanted to introduce some new dimension, I had to create a new table and to put a bit more code for inserting the data. And it was just too much maintenance for me. Also, I had to take care about not duplicating some of the data here. And this is because of the nature of PHP. PHP, it's kind of a stateless, so every request is independent for the other, from the other request, so I couldn't keep some things in memory. If I could keep some references in memory, I probably could optimize some things here. And actually, question to the audience, do you have an idea what this query actually would produce? Like, what's the idea behind this query? Maybe I'll say that.
Bucketing?
Yeah, it's bucketing for a histogram. And I also had to write a lot of kind of queries that are in the data scientist-ish type of queries, which also was, for me, introduced a bit of a learning curve. But the system had really had coded in itself such type of queries. And this here represents a histogram of the time to first byte. Like we can see that the median is around 1.8 seconds. It's a bit skewed. And with the help of Plotly, the JavaScript library for visualization, I could create such panels for distributions for operating systems and mobile operating systems, and I also could write such bar charts that were showing kind of the relationship between the first byte and start render time. And yeah, reference to the Plotly, it's a really cool library, really rich, and you can create a bunch of panels with it. But I found myself like having difficulties and probably not focusing at the right place. So the, as I say, when you build a real user monitoring system, you need to change your mindset, and your queries should be more like in data scientist style. And the PHP world and the ORM that I was using Doctrine, it's not really meant for for writing complex queries from this fashion. So I found myself writing my own query builder and using Doctrine when convenient, and using my query builder when convenient. But this was, again, too much maintenance for just for a single maintainer of a project. I also wanted to introduce a user management and permission system. But again, with my limited time and working from time to time on the project during the weekends, this was just, again, too much. It was not the right focus. I wanted just to show some meaningful data. And yeah, I really love Plotly, but I just ended up with large blobs of JavaScript here and there, and it was more like more and more Plotly. But I wanted to see data, not writing JavaScript. Right? I took a break, I believe, half a year, and I focused on my main job, but from time to time I was doing research, and I was reading some other articles about time series databases, and I started exploring some of the available open source systems for visualization. So I kind of rebuilt the complete backend. I still kept Boomerang, but I rewritten the server side, so I completely removed Nginx and PHP, and I used Golang. I replaced MySQL with ClickHouse, and I replaced all the custom code, all the PHP and Plotly with Grafana. And again, if you would like to play with the current version of Basicrom, that's what I ended up with. That's actually a bit of a rebranded version of Grafana with the specific Basicrom dashboards and settings. So if you would like to play with it, just visit this address and write calendar as a username and password. So where Golang was really useful, Golang, it's just different paradigm. It's different idea compared to PHP. Golang, you can compile a single binary, and in this single binary, everything that I needed was packaged inside the binary. So it's just a process that you run on the server, and it has everything inside. And this allowed me to replace to get rid of Nginx, because Golang has a package for built-in HTTP server. And yes, PHP also has a package for PHP for HTTP server, but you need to do a lot of workarounds to make it working. It's just not native in this is not native in PHP. I also could leverage the existing ClickHouse package in Golang for interacting with the ClickHouse database, and I took advantage of asynchronous insert, which saved me a lot of. I could get rid of some code that I had in the PHP version of the of Basicrom. Also, in Golang, it was very easy to create a backup mechanism for all the data that was flowing through the system, because in Golang I could easily keep stuff in memory. I didn't have to write each request to the system on a file and later to batch it and bundle it. I was just keeping this data points and requests in memory for 10 minutes, and I could just flush them on the hard drive and compress them. And this was, again, really, really easy. Few lines of code and just natively coming in Golang. And also for some cases where I needed encryption, again, in Golang, there is a Let's Encrypt package. It's a third-party package, but I could easily just spin a server and say, okay, I want to use Let's Encrypt, and I was getting secure connection to this server. It really reduced the operation, the effort on the operations side. I also took advantage of a GeoIP lookup library, which is using the MaxMind database. And why I needed this? Because in a real user monitoring system, you would like to see from which city a visitor visited the website, or from which country visited the website. This is really helpful when you want to create a report and when you want to figure out maybe in which countries your website is slow. I also took advantage of another library about user agent parsing. So this library helped me to extract important information about the browser name, the operating system, the user agent family. And I also started using my new favorite database, ClickHouse. So you remember where I say that I was doing a lot of work when I was like batching and bundling everything and inserting these big batches in MySQL. ClickHouse comes with a really cool feature called asynchronous inserts. So ClickHouse allowed me every time when a request reaches my backend to immediately to create an insert to ClickHouse, and ClickHouse was internally batching this, and it was deciding where it needs to insert in the database. So this was not this helped to not reach some performance bottlenecks. Another thing that I could do with ClickHouse, so here you see I have 7 tables in the old setup with MySQL, But in ClickHouse, I actually end up with two tables, and I actually could have one table, but I needed this table for showing the host names in the filters in Grafana. And just ClickHouse, or in general, when we work with time series, the main idea is that here the data is normalized. I try to really build real user monitoring system in the fashion of a web shop, right? Which is really the wrong idea. But when we use time series database, the idea is that the data, you can just throw your data into this database. You have one large fat table, and you throw a lot of data, and you don't really need to consider duplication of the data. For example, here we have this field is device type, and I don't have a foreign key here to another table where I keep references to all the device types. I just can insert the same string over and over again, desktop, 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 and this database will be completely fine with it. It will compress the data internally, and I won't experience any performance bottlenecks when I filter by this field. And here is my other favorite feature in ClickHouse. It's called low cardinality data type, and this data type is really convenient for columns where the distinct values in these columns are less than 10,000, because this it's optimizing internally, and it's the wear conditions and the filters in this case are much faster when we use low cardinality. If we have more than 10,000 distinct values, we probably need to go again to something like this and to start introducing additional dimension tables. So here in left is really, I would say insane. I even don't know how I created this. I'm really surprised with myself, and we cannot zoom in here, but this was a process where it included querying my MySQL database, and I had some application code, and I had a bunch of cron jobs, and this was trying to guess and to find out all the sessions that bounced and what was the duration of the sessions. It was just really complex. And for example, to calculate the bounce rate with my new setup in ClickHouse, I just could use such a query. Again, I got a bit help with this query. I don't completely understand it, but it works. And it's much more simple and much more, it makes my, it makes basic RAM much easier to maintain. And with this query, I could actually create easily this correlation between bounce rate and epic and metric. And in our case, this is time to first byte. Also, I want to say that open source is not only about how great is the open source product that you work with, but also the community is very important. And that's why I also stick to ClickHouse. They have really great Slack community. And every time when I ask a question, I can say that in the matter of few hours, I get really a good response. For example, here I'm asking, hey, I wrote this query, but I feel that it's not optimal. I'm not SQL expert. And here another expert actually suggested a better way how to write this query. It's shorter and it's much more performant. And also, probably this is the first and probably the last database channel, YouTube channel that I'll be subscribed, but I'm actually subscribed to the ClickHouse YouTube channel, and they have really, really good videos. Like they have every month, they have like a release party video where the ClickHouse team is showing the new features, and there are a lot of good tutorials. So it's really welcoming for beginners. And they say you get support from the community, and there are really good materials out there. So now let's look at the user interface, Grafana. Earlier I mentioned that I was about to start in the first version of Basic RAM. I was about to start implementing my own user management and login and authentication. In Grafana, this comes out of the box. So it's much easier to add new user, to give them different permissions. And again, this is just the code that I would never want to write again. Right. And in this repository, I bundle the basic RAM version of Grafana. It has some customizations. Also, another benefit of Grafana is it's very easy to model the data and what you want to see in the visualization panels. So, for example, here we have we can define filters. We can have a preview of our data. We can also configure different things. For example, here I'm just showing how I can configure different colors for the different thresholds. And also there is an SQL editor. So when I write the SQL here, this Grafana uses this SQL to fetch the data from ClickHouse. And here are other panels that I took advantage of. Here is the world map, so I could. It was really literally plug and play. I just configured a few stuff and I said from where to read the data about the countries. Grafana also has a third party plugin for Plotly. So I still, there were scenarios where I wanted to build some more complex panels. And with this panel, I could actually build this one, which is showing how the device, the screen size is, the width of the screen size is distributed. Yeah, time series, this is the kind of the most, the default view in Grafana, and also I could present the data in a table. This is very good when you want to explore your own data. Also, Grafana comes with different data sources, and of course, Grafana needs to know how to talk to ClickHouse. In my in basic RAM, I'm using a data source developed by a company called Autinity. But there is also another one developed by, actually official by ClickHouse, right? yeah, and just to say that all these things that I'm showing, all these dashboards that are built in the basic RAM version of Grafana, everything there is actually under version control. So. It's not just that I created a dashboard in Grafana instance and exported it and saved it somewhere. This I have this repository where I have the configuration for each of the panels that I'm maintaining. And then this makes it much easier when I need to change something or to add a new panel. And I can go through the history and I can understand what actually changed if something has to be reverted. Yeah, for example, here we are seeing how I keep this row as it's a templated SQL, but this is how it's presented then when we look in Grafana. And again, out of all this source code configuration that I keep for the dashboards, I'm building a Docker image where here we have a bit of branding work, just removing some things from the default or rewriting some things from the default Grafana image. Here we are installing the plugins that we need for our setup, and here we are importing all the configurations for the dashboards and the data sources. And what I found over time when I spoke to different people who asked me about real user monitoring systems, very often the conversation was just ending when I was explaining, yeah, you need to run this component on this server, and you need to run this component on this server, and you need to run this component on this server. And it looks like their use case, the use case of the people that I spoke to, was actually not requiring them to scale. They had pretty small websites or web shops. And I work on something a bit more monolithic. It's called Basic RAM All-in-One. And the idea is that probably it sounds from engineering point of view a bad practice, but it could be a really practical thing. The idea is to run everything on one big box, and I believe for €20 a month, this could be actually hosted somewhere. And I tested it. It can handle 1.5 million page views a month. And the idea here is I introduced traffic, which is a proxy. It stays in front of this of all the components, and it's helping me for SSL termination and routing request, because some of the requests needs to go to the data collection part and other requests needs to go to the Grafana, to the part where we analyze the data. So this is really convenient, and it's really easy for people if you just want to give it a try. And a few takeaways. I just have to say that a Rio user monitoring system is fairly complex system, and you need to learn to train yourself if you want to develop one. You need to learn more about on the data collection side, where how the data is collected from the browser, how to visualize the data, and it will be a bonus if you learn about how data time series databases work. Again, choosing the right database to solve the right problem is the key. And it's great when you can transfer a problem from the application on the database layer. It just saves a lot of time. And yeah, Grafana could save a lot of time and effort. Even I recommend it, even if you still want to build your own front end, maybe just start with Grafana to play with the data and to display something. It literally will save a lot of time. And I got a signal that I ran out of time, but you can catch me up. Or I can take one question.
Do you have any kind of pattern where you can exclude the PII or user data in the user monitoring?
So in this project, we don't really keep any IP addresses. So for example, that, I guess that's what we consider like user data, or yeah. So the backend doesn't store any personal data in this case. So by default, it's using the IP address only to identify the country and the city, but it's not storing the IP address after that. And I know that on the data collection site from the Boomerang library. I'm not sure if it's on the, so Boomerang library has also like part of the Boomerang source code is private, but I know that for PCI compliance reasons, it has special parts that try to avoid collecting stuff around the user. Sometimes the user may put, for example, credit card number, and this could be actually collected by mistake. This library also tries to avoid collecting critical user information.
So, for example, if we have cookie consent in our website, so
Do you mean to consent the So the library comes with a special snippet that's a loader snippet, so you can have your own callback. So you can call this loader snippet only after a cookie consent. So it's possible.